Okay. Well, first of all, I think I called the Tuesday, October 1st, meeting of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority to order, and I appreciate the staff's work as we had newly appointed board members, and we worked to find a date that was going to be mutually acceptable for everybody. I also appreciate the staff's work to utilize what is still newish to ADA, the video conferencing equipment, and I appreciate everybody's flexibility. Let's begin with a roll call of board members.
Mr. Wilkins.
Present by teleconference.
Mr. Kowalski.
Present.
Mr. Cruz.
Here.
Ms. Nygaard.
Here.
Mr. Hughes.
Present.
Mr. Dick.
Here.
Commissioner Bell.
Here.
All present.
Well, excellent. We have an agenda before us that was, I just want to be sure that people are focused on the one that was modified slightly, that has item G that differentiates it from the one in the initial board packet. Item G is election of officers. Is there any other proposed changes to the agenda? Can I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
So moved.
Let's have, I think, okay, well, Wilson moving with Russell seconding. Okay. Are there any objections on the agenda as proposed? Seeing none, the agenda is adopted. Before we move to roll call of staff and public, I do want to give a warm welcome to Mike Kowalski. He's with the Department of Revenue and recently was assigned the responsibilities by Acting Commissioner Rodell for ADA and AEA. And as you sometimes see, depending on competing interests, we may also see Acting Commissioner Rodell in the future, but again, we welcome Mike's participation and know he has a wealth of experience. So I appreciate your joining us. And let's move to item number 4, roll call of staff.
Let's start with Mr. Leonard.
Ted Leonard, ADA.
Michael Lamb, ADA.
Mark Davis, ADA.
Can you
want to
talk about ADA?
Brady Appleby, ADA. Lord Thunder, ADA.
Person Rodgers, ADA.
Nick Schmoniak, ADA.
Jeff Van Lon, ADA.
Jerry Severson, ADA.
Frank Kempinen, ADA. Are there any ADA on the phone? Okay, let's move on to public.
Charles DeSera, Sidness on.
Tom Delamater, Sidness on.
Jerry Judet, Department of Law.
Randy Hobbs, out Miami. Colin Sabine, Inspector Development.
Michael Martin, Northern Bank.
Will Bader, Northern Bank.
Chris Brown, SWH.
Jeff Logan, Chris Logan.
Rick Kepner, NASA.
Keith Hand, Special Energy.
Ray Rashford, Special Energy.
Any public on the phone?
Yes, Mayor Lou Hopkins, Fairbanks, North Star Borough.
Looks like we're all accounted for.
Thank you very much. That brings us to item number 5, which is public comments, and we welcome anyone first in Anchorage. If you'd like to speak to an issue before the ADA board, we welcome public comments. And Ted, just so you know, as we move the camera view over to fully encompass the board, I don't have good view on what's on your right. So if you'll identify if people had to, you know, come forward, I like the angle that we have now. But just so you understand what we're looking at here. So has anybody come forward on public comments in Anchorage?
No, Commissioner.
Okay, thank you. Then moving to public comments on the phone, is there anybody that would like to address the board at this time?
Yes, thank you. This is Mayor Luke Hopkins, serving North Star Borough. I'm not sure if anyone else was in the queue to speak on the phone, from the phone.
Please proceed.
Thank you very much. Sorry I have to call in today, but as Mayor of Fairbanks North Star Borough, of course it's election day across the state, and had certain issues that I certainly want to track here in my community. But the other piece that's very important to our community is, again, the resolving the issue of the high cost of energy. And I have heard, you know, again, as oil tanks get filled in the fall, at this time of year, lots of people are letting me know the amount that they have to pay. This goes forward then to the amount that I certainly hope for the cost of natural gas coming into our community. It is at the lowest possible cost, and I am concerned that as the project, the Interior Energy Project, moves forward, there is an increase in the estimated cost of the commodity natural gas for MCF pricing, and that has already caused some strong concerns from members of the community that I hear from, that I speak to on a regular basis. And I do hope that as the board considers approval of various components of the Interior Energy Project, that they scrutinize the costs, therefore what the actual project makeup is, to ensure that our community gets the lowest possible cost of natural gas into our community. The conversion for mom and pop, as I've said before, is the most important piece for our economy and also for our air quality. So I ask you to please put that at the top of your list. I understand that as soon as possible is a major component of it, but the lowest cost energy to our community is one of the most critical factors for, as I said, for my community, for this community, and the community that you're watching out for. That concludes my comments. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for your comments, and we certainly understand the circumstances today, and you have been a very active participant in this process today, and we appreciate it, Mayor. Any other members of the public that would like to address the ADA board at this time? Okay. Then we'll close public comments and moving to item number 6, which are prior minutes. And I'd like to point out on July 25th and August 9th, our board composition was very different. And so actually, Gary, if I can ask you specifically, if you would make a motion or if you have any amendment, you were present at both of those and many of our board members were not. Can I ask you to make a motion for those 2 days?
Gary, can you hear?
Yes, I can hear. I can hear fine.
Okay. And Gary, just recognizing you were present at July 25th and August 9th.
I'm sorry. I didn't understand your question. Yes, would you like to do them three motions, David, meeting by meeting?
Actually, and if you were present also at the August 29th, and you're comfortable, you could do them all in one, but I did want to be sure that we distinguish, knowing that, you know, that many people were not present at those first two. So if you're comfortable with all three, that would be fine.
Frankly, I'm more comfortable doing one at a time. So let's start. I would move that the July 25th minutes be approved as presented.
And I believe I'm the only member that was also present, so as chair, I'll second that, which may be a little unconventional, but I don't think it's out of order if we have a parliamentarian to correct it. So we have a motion and a second for July 25th before us. Are there any objections to approval of July 25th minutes? Seeing none, July 25th minutes are adopted. Moving to August 9th.
Madam Chair, I would move that the August 9th minutes be approved as presented.
Thank you. Wilson, can I call on you for a second?
And I would second.
Thank you. So our August 9th minutes are before us. We had a short meeting on that date. Any questions or objections from board members? Seeing none, August 9th minutes are corrected. And I'm sorry, approved. Sorry. Now moving to August 29th, which now all of our board members that are currently appointed may participate in this one. So August 29th, may I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move August 29th minutes be approved as presented, and I have one correction, please.
Okay, let's have a second, and we'll move to that.
I'll second.
Okay, yeah,
Madam Chair, if I could, and it's not a correction, it's just, I think, a clarification, if I could have the board's indulgence, it would look on page 204 in section 6B, paragraph 2, line number 4, and this speaks to when the subcommittee may be called into action, and the sentence reads, to act fairly quickly. I'd like, with the board's approval, to change that to the word fairly to very quickly. I think that I probably use the word fairly, but I think it reflects, the word very quickly reflects the issue that we'll only be called into action if we need to be to make a very quick decision. So with the board's indulgence, I would move that word be the word fairly be replaced by very.
But, and for the board's sake, typically what we have is a summary of the action items and not a full transcript. And so, again, if we're capturing the actions in the spirit of the discussion, again, not a full transcript, we do have the tapes. Is there any objection to that? Okay, so seeing none, then we have a motion with a request to modify the... on page 2, fairly to very. Crystal, I heard you had seconded it. Are you comfortable with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other corrections in the minutes? Any objections to adopting the minutes as amended? Seeing none, the minutes from Thursday, August 29th, are approved. That brings us to new business. Item 7A is a loan resolution 1304 from Kiska Properties, and we're going to turn to Ted and his staff, but I do want to say at this time that I'll chair the discussion on this, but when it comes to the voting, I recuse myself. I am a shareholder of Sitnisok Native Corporation, so but in terms of managing the meeting and the discussion, I'd like to move to Ted and his staff to present this resolution.
Yes, Chair. Resolution 13-04 is a request from Northrim for ADA to participate in a loan for $6,637,500, and our participation would be 90% at $5,973,750. And Chair, I would like to ask Chris to come up to present the loan participation to the board, if it's okay with you.
Please proceed.
Can you see her? Commissioner,
good morning.
We see most of Ted, but and what? Not the chair. Okay.
Yeah. Can I try places?
Yes.
Welcome, Chris.
Good morning. Thank you. Well, Ted has given you the dollar amount here, so I will just add that the term on ADA's portion of this loan is for a fixed 25 years, and the bank portion is fixed for 10. Is that on?
Yeah, it's on.
Okay. The use of the proceeds of this loan is to purchase the underlying leasehold position and the existing improvements. It includes an office building, a restaurant, and new construction for a proposed Tudor bingo building. The square footages of those buildings have been listed. The bingo building at 19,244. The office building that houses Parker Grilling at 11,400. And the restaurant, which is Lily's Restaurant, at 3,294. It would retain, this credit would retain 49 jobs and create 79 to 90 construction jobs for the construction of that building. The managing entity is managed by Mark Pfeffer. He's a well-known developer in the state. The collateral position that we would take is a leasehold deed of trust, recorded first lien position on the improvement, located on the property described in the master lease and landlord consent between Tisca Properties LLC and Calais Company Inc., who is the key owner of the land. The property was appraised by Greg Wing of North Pacific Advisors. He appraised it at $8,850,000 at complete, which gives us a 75% loan to value. The projected net operating income is proposed to service 1.27 to 1, which is above our de minimis of 1.25. Adding back in vacancy and credit loss, we'd be at about a 1.35 to 1. We will require an assignment of leases with lessee acknowledgement, and this loan is subject to a 90% guarantee, a BIA guarantee, and certification of value from the appraiser once that building is complete. One of the borrowing entities does have related debt with us. There are three related loans with a combined balance of, I'll use a rounded figure, $12.8 million plus. And all of those loans that we have been paid as agreed. The financial information on this credit was provided to you under separate cover. There are no known environmental issues on this property. The strengths that we saw in this credit or the fact that there would be a BIA guarantee with an interest rate subsidy. It will be professionally managed. It is new construction, at least in the primary building, and there will be long-term leases in place with stable tenants. The perceived weaknesses are the fact that this property has an average ingress and egress, but we felt it was mitigated by very good exposure on Tudor. And it is a leasehold position that we would be taking versus the simple. However, again, we felt this was mitigated by the BIE guarantee that we'd be put in place. In regards to portfolio diversification, these are June month-end figures for the statewide portfolio in office warehouse. We're at 7.51%, and with this credit, it would increase to 8.89%. And for the Anchorage region, we're at 10.99, and that would increase to 13.43. In regards to ADA's capacity for fiscal year 14, assuming that the board approves this credit, we would be at $26.27 million still available, unencumbered to fund. And so we do have sufficient funds in order to go forward with this request. And staff is recommending funding of this loan for today. So with that, I would open it up for any questions that you have.
Thank you, Chris. Before we move into discussion, can we have a motion to a motion to approve the loan resolution, and then we'll move into discussion?
So moved.
Wilson, is there a second?
I'll second.
Thanks, Mike. Okay. So we have a motion and a second. We'll move to any discussion for Chris, Ted, or others on this. And as Chris noted, the ADA staff and the board do have the benefit of some additional credit information that is not presented in the packet. And if there are questions on that, we will want to move to executive session. I just wanted to distinguish between the two. But any questions specifically about this resolution?
Madam Chair.
Russell?
Just quickly, and again, this, and I apologize, this is maybe for my own education on this, but is there any particular reason, I think this may get back to the overarching portfolio allocation strategy that we've talked about the last meeting that Ted and his group are working on, but is there any particular reason why North Rim is only doing 10% of this loan?
Chris or Ted, do you want to answer Russell's question?
I think that North Rim certainly has the capability of taking a higher percentage. We, in our program, maxed out at taking 90%, so we require that the lender have at least 10%. And I'm going to surmise here that the borrower would like to keep as many funds in a long-term on a long-term fixed mm-hmm. basis, so that often is why they try to maximize ADA's percentage interest, because as indicated, North Rim's term would be 10 years, ours would be 25.
Plus tying into a fixed rate.
Right. Well, yeah. North Rim's going to fix, but they have a different definition of fixed than we do.
And if the board, if there's a North Rim representative president, we can call them before it, but if that's a satisfactory answer and if...
Yeah, I think that's fine. It was, again, it was just for my own education with the 90% BIA guarantee. I was just curious as to why only 10%. That's fine. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions from the board on this resolution?
Just one real quick on the BIA guarantee. You mentioned it's a guarantee with an interest...
rate subsidy.
And what does that mean?
They actually get a percentage of the interest back over the first 3 years. Yeah. From BIA. It's actually a subsidy of that rate.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And it's not, it has to do with, you know, their funding as well. You're not, when you go in for BIA guarantee, you're not guaranteed that rebate back. But if they have funding, they will.
Mm-hmm. So
your interest rate with them will actually net out to be less.
So there's really two separate issues. There's an interest rate subsidy, if you will, and there's a 90% guarantee also.
It's two to two.
And the guarantee will follow the length of the loan.
That's correct.
That's it. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mike?
Yeah, I just asked Chris for clarification in the your description of the jobs that would be retained. You said the word 49, but the documents before say 47.
My mistake then.
Okay.
I was looking at the 79 below. It's 47.
Got it.
Would be the correct number.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Any other questions from board members? So we have a resolution before us. We've had discussion. Would the board like to move to a roll call vote?
Call for the question.
Okay. Call for the question. Will staff please do a roll call vote?
Mr. Wilkins?
Aye.
Mr. Pawlowski?
Yes.
Mr. Pruitt?
Yes.
Ms. Nygaard?
Yes.
Mr. Hughes?
Yes.
Mr. Dick?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
And I'm Rick Hughes, given my relationship with Fitness Art.
Okay. Motion carries.
Thank you. That brings us to item B, resolution G13-15, Polaris Fund Investment. Ted, you and your staff want to present this information for us?
Yes, Chair. Very quickly, I'm going to be asking Michael Lamb to come forward. But just to give the board, since we have new board members with us, about 10 or 9, since 1990, we were involved in a venture capital fund. We made an investment in that fund. And very quickly, it invested in firms, and then we would get paid back a rate of return on that investment. At the end of 2012, the fund has pretty much ran its limit, and the board agreed with the partnership to dissolve the fund and move forward. At that point in time, when we dissolved the fund, ADA received some stock that was still part of the fund when it was distributed. So what we're looking at here is to ensure that everything's okay with us holding those stocks, which isn't a normal investment that we would hold. We needed to go back into our investment policy and do a resolution to allow us to hold the stock until we're either paid out on the stock or we decide to write off the investments. Yeah. And Michael, please come forward if that's okay with the chair.
Please.
And I'll let Michael give a more technical.
Thank you. Thank you, Ted, Chair, Board. Yeah, I think Ted actually did a pretty good. Well, of course he did a good job. Sorry, let me just say that. Ted did a good job. The essence of it is this was an investment made almost 23 years ago. It was intended to last a decade. The partnership was resolved. As you can tell by the letter that came forth, the authority contributed about $6 million return. Hesrick had $7.6 million return. But the interesting thing is really on the second page of the memo, that shows the other asset that does that dissolution, and essentially received some common shares, which are not allowed by investment policy, for some preferred shares. And of course, the probably going to butcher the name, but the Acronis receivable, interestingly enough, I think it was last week, 8/31, we actually received one of those $197,000 payments. So this resolution essentially doesn't change the investment policy, but it allows for the investment policy to the for the board to specifically allow us to hold on to the stock, and whether common preferred, until some point it makes sense for us to sell it or do whatever with it. So we essentially are, bottom line, trying to do a housekeeping task through this resolution to get an investment that's not approved, that we ended up with not by our action, but we do have it, to be recognized by the board to be held until something is determined, what makes most sense with that. And I think with that, we'll take questions. Sorry.
Any questions from board members? For Ted or Michael? Russell?
Just more, I appreciate the explanation. Ted, just, we know this has been out there for a while. I'm just curious if you have any ideas or thoughts in terms of how long you plan on holding this, and what the strategy might be going forward for these assets.
Russell, or to the board member, actually, at the present time, we are just holding them. I mean, we need to look and see on these stocks. Some of these companies are not active right now, and our CFO will be looking at those companies and deciding what to do with the assets. Again, as Michael said, we have they're actually a very small dollar amount, and
our percentage of ownership of these particular companies are incrementally small. I think at this point, again, just as a housekeeping matter, the partner made a decision, dissolved it, so we have these assets. We're trying to be in compliance with our investment policy, get your permission. Hopefully we'll collect these other two receivables. It'll be almost $400,000, and then I suspect at that point we can take a look to see what makes sense or doesn't make sense. That's really probably the truth of where we're at right now.
You bet.
Thank you. Any other questions from board members?
Just real quickly, what kind of value then have you put to what you received here?
I think, Ms. Applegate, I think I'll just let you say, even though I...
Well, the stock is not marketed at all, traded, so we really couldn't put a value on it. And the Polaris limited partnership was on our books at zero cost, and so right now we know we're holding the stock, but we don't have to report on our books at value.
Okay.
Thank you.
One more, just for the, I'm trying to understand. We show earlier in the document that the authority contributed $6 million, recovered or received $7.6 million, including the original investment of $6 million, and then another $25 million on 12/31. Am I reading that right?
Yes, sir, you are. And the $25,814.54 is part of the $7.6 million. So to date, yeah, we received 7.6, which includes that.
So basically, bigger numbers, at 25.8 was the return on the original 6, if you want to look at it that way?
Well, we gave 6 and we received 7.6 million. So essentially 1.6 back on the 6.
Right.
And then we have these other investments that hopefully they are on our books at zero, which is what I thought. That, I wanted to make sure. Then we'll receive this other amount. So in the end, we should end up with more than 7.6 once we receive some form of value for these other assets.
A little over $8 million, probably.
Yeah, just again, these are, those stocks are in, I think, closely held small companies that you can't really go to the market or to one of the pricing entities and say, give us a price on it. And it's just, we keep them on our books, and at some point we'll do something with them.
But the distribution of the 25.8 was based on an additional investment beyond the original six?
No.
Okay.
No, that was the final payment when they dissolved the fund, is my understanding.
So essentially, the partnership goes away. Here's a check for $25,000.
Yeah.
Additionally, here's some common stock. Here's some.
I'm good now.
Okay.
I've got a question. The
Dana or Mike? Dana? Okay. Yes. Proceed.
The stocks, I understand, being valued at zero. The royalty interest, the document says, is in a producing lease. Does that have a value associated with it at this point?
I'm going to defer to the controller.
We have no value on our books for them, but we are getting approximately $2,000 in our royalty payments that were replaced with income.
I think the essence of it is, in terms of when you look at the balance sheet, it's the value is recorded conservatively. We're not pretty sure we're going to get it. We say we hold it, but we don't actually blow up our balance sheet.
Good. Thanks for the clarification.
Any further questions from board members? Seeing none, is there a motion to adopt resolution G13-15?
So moved.
Is that Mike?
Yep. Second.
Is there and a second? We have a motion and a second for resolution G13-15, Polaris Fund Investments. If we can move to a roll call vote, please.
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Ms. Kowalski.
Yes.
Mr. Prude.
Yes.
Ms. Nygaard.
Yes.
Mr. Hughes.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Commissioner Bell.
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you. That brings us to item C, resolution G13-16, which is aid of participation in the Alaska Municipal League Investment Pool. I imagine Ted and Mike will be addressing this. And I'm sorry, let me read it completely. In resolution G01-14D. So, again, if you want to give a description, and then we can decide if we'll do these as how to handle the mechanics of it. But if you'll describe the actions, that'll be appreciated.
Yes, Chair. This is resolution G13-6. This resolution would allow us to join the Alaska Municipal League Investment Pool to utilize the ability of that fund to, in essence, be able to invest short-term funds of ours. And again, I'd probably pass it on to our CFO to give the technical reasons why we believe that this would be a good value to the authority to be in the municipal investment pool.
Thank you, Mr. Lender. Madam Chair, board members, before I provide a few summary comments on resolution G13-16 and G01-14D, I think it is appropriate that I disclose that AIDA is benefiting from some of my insider knowledge and information of the pool because I have been and am currently still on the board of the Alaska Municipal League Investment Pool. But of course, no board member, which includes me, receives any compensation for being on the board, other than, of course, food at certain times for being on the board. With that said, and as stated in the documents before you, the Alaska Municipal League Investment Pool, AMLIP, and or the pool was formed by the legislature and signed into law by the governor in 1992 via the Alaska Investment Pool, which became Alaska Statutes 3723010 to 3723900. The Alaskan Pool, which is a local pool, has been in existence now for over two decades, and it has a long history that includes being under ongoing intense scrutiny as a result of its purposely designed oversight structure and its ongoing processes for an investment holding reviews. The processes that are being used and the holdings are constantly being looked at. In fact, the Government Finance Officers Association, the GFOA of the United States and Canada, invited Jeff Pantages, who is the Chief Investment Officer of the last permanent capital manager, APCM, who actually are the financial advisor to the pool board and are one of ADA's external money managers, to speak at their national conference in June of 2010 about the pool structure, the segregation of duties, and its internal controls. After the flight safety era post-2008-2009, the AMLIP nationally was held out for its design and safety. I can tell you, because of my information that I have, and I only have audit numbers through 6/30 of 2012 at this time, but the pool through that date had taken in $7,818,291,514 in deposits from its members since September 15th of 94. Likewise, through 6/30 of 12, it had purchased $234,659,736,306 in investments and had returned to its members earnings of $91,062,001. It's had 5,200 days that its investments are independently valued. And what really matters here, it has had zero security defaults. So we talked about safety. There has been zero time that members didn't get their money transferred back to them on the day they wanted it, liquidity. And there have been zero days that the pool's returns were not positive yield, though they are exceedingly low and have been low as a result of quantitative easing. So the question then is, why does the pool make sense for ADA? And though ADA does have many other segregated bank accounts used to avoid commingling of funds, and though it has both internally and externally managed funds, it does not have an option available to it now that can do both things together. In other words, and for instance, the pool will allow ADA to completely segregate the proceeds from a bond sale or even accept funds, and then have those same funds immediately institutionally invested and also immediately accessible and available for use as required. In short, the pool allows for one-stop segregation and investing of funds in a safe place. That then makes arbitrage, yield restrictions, and use of funds reporting very efficient. I did look through and compare the pool's allowed investments against ADA's internally managed investments, and I found no conflicts. But wanting to avoid any risk related to the issue, I asked KeyBank, which is ADA's bank, to compare both investment policies, and I received an email back on Friday that said AMLIP does not invest in any securities prohibited by ADA's IPS, which essentially is Section D, allowable investments, page 7 of 10 in the our investment policy. And interestingly enough, too, the pool is also subject to the Alaska Open Meetings Law. So to conclude, I recommend that the board adopt Resolution G13, and I will try to answer any questions that relate to it.
Chair, could I make one last comment before we throw open? Again, as Michael said, in my prior experience in working in municipalities and school districts, that wherever the organization I was with, we utilized this investment fund to assist us in, as Michael said, segregating funds, being able to know that for a construction project, for example, that we could put these funds into a short-term market, get a rate of return, but always be able to count on the fact that we could pull them out at any time that we needed to. So in essence, you get a rate of return, plus you have the ability, the liquidity, based on the fact that they have so many funds in the investment fund through all the different municipalities in the state. I believe, doesn't the state of Alaska, Michael? I'm throwing that at you, but I believe at one time they had some money even. But anyway, excuse me, Chair.
Well, Ted, I was going to ask you a procedural question. Item C has both
Resolution G13-16 and the Resolution G01-14 amended. Should you describe that so we understand their relationship? We can take them up separately, but since you've listed them both under item C, do you want to describe the relationship?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll do that. In short, the G13-16 is first, which, if it's adopted, then the follow-up, the next resolution, is essentially modifies the investment policy to insert what the board approved. And it actually does two things. It does a housekeeping issue, or does a housekeeping act also, in that it clarifies that the SETS funds, like the revolving fund, follow under the same investment criteria. The SETS fund will follow the same investment policies that the revolving fund has right now. So there's sequence one, that if you approve that it makes sense for Ada to join the pool, then the second step is the adoption by the board of a resolution that incorporates that into our actual investment policies.
Thanks, Michael, for putting that on the record. In our board packets, we have a redline version and a clean version of that amended and restated resolution. So, Ted or Michael, any other comments by way of overview or introduction before we go to board questions?
No, Chair.
Yes.
We're ready to take any questions from the board.
And I know we've had a couple of people may have joined us by phone, and again, just acknowledging that if there's anybody who's joined us by phone that would like to identify themselves for the record, I welcome that at this time. Okay. And again, knowing that Gary was with us by phone, Gary, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Okay, our logistics are continuing to work. Okay, so we're going to move then to board questions. And since they're listed together, we can open this up to questions on either element, but as has been explained, the amending the resolution would be reflective of our actions if we choose to adopt G13-16. So, questions from the board?
Madam Chair?
Gary, please.
Yes, I have a number, if I could, please. What do we do now? And what if we don't do anything today?
Mr. Wilkin, I guess, as I did say, that we have a lot of segregated individual accounts that one allows for the segregation, but then in the revolving fund, some of that is just left basically in a sort of a checking account, and some of it gets invested internally, usually treasuries over some time period, and then of course the externally managed funds. I can tell you SETS is a good example, that when we received the $57.5 million, not knowing when it would be used, treasuries were purchased that had different maturity dates. And then as the legislature last year actually changed the nature of those SETS funds to be, hopefully I say this correctly, essentially general dollars from the state, which the interest appropriated. The general dollars, those dollars were then subject to any earnings that came from them to go back to the state. But because we didn't have a vehicle like the pool, the treasuries were bought that had different maturity dates, and at 6:30, we didn't have enough cash actually to put those monies into a separate account that we actually do use for funds that the state is entitled to the investment earnings. We have to wait. And so one of the issues of not having it right now is, for the nature of the type of funds that we had, was that we're having to do an allocation of interest, and which just takes a lot more work. I think that also the other thing is it's been a long time since ADA has actually issued, you know, like revenue bonds or something. And depending upon the nature of what you do with the funds from the bond sale, it may or may not matter. If you do, for example, a refunding of bonds, usually those monies are kept by third party and then are used to defease the bonds. So we never touch and have it hold that fund anyhow, so we never get into an issue of having to separately track the proceeds from those specific bonds and then report to the IRS on it. And so the world's probably nothing bad happens if we don't do anything. But I think the truth of the matter is that we're far better off doing this. And as you know, coming from the Fairbanks area, the Fairbanks North Star Borough is a member of the pool, and every time that we issue bonds up there, all of them, of course, being school bonds, every single bond sale, a separate, unique AMLIC account is opened, and those funds are put into, as is the case with Matanuska Assistant in the Borough, or Kodiak, or Kenai Peninsula Borough. And so, yes, we've operated a long time without it, but there's also the reality that as soon as you possibly can, you want to have the bond proceeds invested. And it's a time-consuming thing to manage. You know, set funds alone, $57.5 million, and try to pick when you're going to need that money. It's far easier to just put it in an account where that's what they do.
So what I'm hearing is that it's more efficient, and you're able to invest in the pool, but not give up. Actually gain liquidity. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
To Board Member Wilkins, I think what we're trying to say is that this is an additional cash management tool that ADA could utilize that has a feature of very high liquidity and the ability to set up different funds to segregate ADA's cash for certain things very quickly. It's much easier, pretty much, if I remember right, mm-hmm. Michael, when I was there, you could call them up,
yep.
And the next day have a new account in your total account for funds.
Yeah, that's the benefit, and that's why, you know, I just happen to know the history, and there was curiosity whether it would ever float, and Dave Rose, if you remember Dave Rose, basically helped subsidize it through ATCM as the president to get it going, and there was a question whether enough funds would ever actually be put into the pool to make it stand alone and survive. And I can tell you before 2008-09, it was a goal to try to reach $100 million, and then it grew from there to 200 to 300, and the pool went up to over $600 million. You just see this huge flight in 2008 to 2009. People went to the pool, and again, it's never lost. It's never had a security go bad. And
thank you, Michael. I just want to make sure if Jerry has additional questions that he's can get on the record.
Next question is having to do with Cowan and Associates. They're what amounts to our master money manager. Have they weighed in on this, and have they offered an opinion as to whether this would be a good move?
No, I never asked them because it never even occurred to me that it's not a good move. I would put my mother's money in here.
I think the reason, Gary, and that's a very good question, is that Cowan is really in charge of our long-term investments strategy, and this was looked at as a short-term management under Michael Lamb.
But I can tell you this, that approximately 6-7 years ago, when the vendor contracts, which include the custodian, the bank, the financial advisor to the pool, were up, we actually did hire the pool board, independently hired Callan Associates, specifically Michael O'Leary actually did the report to the board, where we said, okay, does the formation, does the structure of the board, does it still make sense the way we do it? And so, absolutely, I did not ask Callan Associates or Michael Leary about this, but I can tell you that the board actually engaged Callan Associates, Michael Leary, specifically when it was looking at, do we go out the same structure or not? And the response came back is, no, you should keep the pool operating the way it does operate.
So perhaps just for the record then, does management feel that we need to ask Callan Associates as to the wisdom of this move? It sounds like the answer is no.
The executive session, I mean, the executive director, as executive director, I believe, again, that this is just a short-term money management tool, and that you don't need Callan. But again, if the board, we have two options. We could still approve it today, and we can get a memo from Callan regarding this, or we can put it off one more month and go to Callan. I have the utmost confidence that Michael Leary would state that this is a good tool.
I just want your opinion of it on the record. Thank you for that. Now, my next question is there any maximum amount that would be put into this pool from ADA? Are there any limits?
There are no limits, but I think the reality of it is that what we are only talking, I shouldn't say only, but what we are talking about is the internally managed funds, which right now is maybe $20-ish million. We took everything that's not essentially sitting into our checking account and stuck it in there. And then where I'm more looking at is potentially we could issue some bonds in the near term for a project. And where would I put that in a short term? In a short-term spot where I know I could get to it right away, and I know it's going to be invested, and I know it's going to be safe. So in terms of what we do on a day-to-day basis, Gary, I don't see a lot of change in that at all. What I do see, though, is if we do a bond sale, probably would stick some money in there. And there's a question right now about the SEPs funds. I think we have two more treasuries that mature, I think at the end of October, maybe the end of November, if I'm remembering right. Anyhow, there's a couple more. I would probably take those funds, set it into a segregated account, because depending upon how things unfold, it may or may not be needed in the near term. I don't know yet. But I have to be able to cover a check when somebody wants to write one.
So is the answer then that there are no upper limits on the amount that ADA can utilize the AMLIP?
The pool itself has no upper limits. And there are times that you can actually see huge swings. And, you know, like when Matt Sue did the prison deal and stuff, you saw a lot of that money go in there, and then it went out pretty fast. So the pool itself has no limits. I think as a practical day-to-day matter, we definitely have specific limits and of how we would use it.
Okay. All right, thank you. And I had eight questions here, and they've all been answered. I would like to, for the board to go to page 3 of G1316, and I'd like to make a suggestion. I think it would be, because this is new for us, for ADA, I think it would be wise to put a date that we want to revisit this, and just to have an assessment as to the wisdom of this decision. So with that, I'd like to make a motion on Section 4, and it would read something like this. And sentence number 4 line four starts in terminating the authority's membership and participation in AMLIP. And up to that point, it speaks to it could be terminated by the executive director terminating or the board adopting a resolution to terminate. I would like to add a sunset to that date. And the sentence in the motion would be that after AMLIP in line four of section four, the words be inserted or until June 30, 2017, whichever event occurs first. So I've moved that, ask for a second, and I'll explain.
Gary, just procedurally, we had begun with discussion, so before we amend, can I ask you to make a motion to adopt this? And if I get a second, then we'll...
Yeah, I would move that to approve G13-16 as presented.
Second.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. And then, Gary, if you'd like to continue, you would bring our attention to Section 4 and Page 3 and a proposed amendment that would modify the sentence. I'll let you take it from there again just to restate it.
Section 4. Page 3, Section 4, line number 4, starting and terminating. After the word AMLIP, there would be a comma that would then go on to read, or until June 30, 2017. Whichever event occurs first. I would move that as an amendment to the motion to approve.
So we have a motion to amend. Is there a second from the board?
Second.
We have a second from Russell.
Just to repeat, this gives us a time. Sometimes these things kind of get embedded, and we forget they're there, and they may or may not work, and we work around things. This gives me some comfort, and it just gives us a hard stop to where 4 years from now, the board can spend whatever time it wishes to renew this decision. It doesn't mean that we would pull away from it. In fact, probably it would simply be a very quick discussion given all the good things we've heard today. So, but I think it's important that the board, at least 4 years from now, have a hard stop and take a look at this policy just to make sure it's benefiting us today, as we think it will today. And I'm not married to the 4 years. That is completely taken out of the sky. So that's the explanation, and thank you.
Chair, could I...
Thanks, Ted, just a moment. To keep us on track, we've got a motion and a second on amendment. And... I want to be sure that we address the amendment first, and then we'll step back to the larger resolution. Is there any further discussion on this amendment from board? And then, Ted, I'll give you an opportunity to address it as well. Okay, then let's turn to Ted. Ted, if you'd like to, if there's any insights about the amendment that you'd like to share with us before we take action, I appreciate it.
Oh, you bet. And thank you, Chair, and thank you, Board Member Wilkin, for making the amendment. My only question would be to our attorney is that if we put this in this resolution, do we need to do anything with the next the investment policy itself? I don't think we would, but
I think it'll work.
Okay. That's all I wanted to ask, Chair.
Okay. Thanks, and we can circle back on that. So we have an amendment before us, and we'll take a roll call on the amendment.
Mr. Wilkin.
Aye.
Mr. Pawlowski.
Yes.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Ms. Nygaard.
Yes.
Mr. Hughes.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Commissioner Bell.
Yes.
Amendment approved.
Okay, so we're back to the larger. Are there other questions or other discussion from board members on the broader resolution?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I just have one related to the existing way you invest your funds today versus what this would be, the yield comparison. Are they similar? Do you anticipate anything different?
Now, the for like-kind investment, no, it's about the same. If anything, it's a little bit better. But for this type of money right now, nothing to brag about. It's just that we get it back when we need it.
Okay.
Here. Any other questions from board members? So, as amended, we have an amended resolution G13-16. Is there a motion to adopt the resolution? We had that before.
Right.
So, any further discussion? Then let's move to a roll call vote on G13-16.
Mr. Wilkin.
Yes.
Hi. Ms. Pawlowski.
Yes.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Ms. Nygaard.
Yes.
Mr. Hughes.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Bell.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Well, thank you. So we've now adopted G13-16, and it's been we've been advised then to modify our investment policies, which brings us to G01-14B. It's been briefly described. Ted or Michael, did you want to add any more discussion on this before we move into board discussion?
No, Madam Chair.
So, board members, we have resolution G01-14D. Are there any questions?
Yeah. Madam Chair?
Please proceed, Mike.
Page 7, in the language to be added, we have the language or any successor to that entity. And I'm just asking for explanation of the relationship of that language back to the amended resolution that we've adopted with a sunset date on it. And is that necessary or overly broad?
Jerry?
Well, the reason why successor is in there is that in the event that the existing entity, which is a non-profit corporation, would mm-hmm. somehow be reconfigured, you wouldn't necessarily have to stop using it. And similarly, it leaves it open for any other investment that might be established under the Act and similar statutes. Now, under the sunset provision, you have to, if that date came and the board didn't extend it, you have to pull out of the AMP. It would still be permissible under the investment policy to put it into that type of investment, but I think you have to come back to the board to put it back into AMPLIP or a successor to that, if that's what you wanted to do.
Okay.
The investment policy gives the management the tools. This is what you can do. So if you run over this, the June 30, 2017 date, they can do something like this, but probably given the sunset, they couldn't keep it in AMLIT. Since the board has specifically directed that cease on that date.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I think Jerry, Mike, tell me if I'm wrong, Mike, is asking if this is too broad under this.
Thanks, Ted. If I can, Madam Chair, I am. The resolution we previously adopted was specifically for AMLIP, and the powers granted in the revision of the investment policy is for AMLIP or any successor to that entity or any other investment pool. Frankly, I have absolutely no problem with the use of the tool for liquidity and all of the reasons that were stated earlier. I just wanted some discussion by the board about the actual language in the revision to the investment policy, considering the previous resolution we just adopted.
Thanks, Mike. Options at this point, we can continue discussion of the resolution. We can have a motion to adopt it and then amend it. So I look to the board to see if there are further discussion items or if someone would like to adopt it and propose an amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd suggest we adopt it and then leave it open to Gary Wilkin to discuss whether or not amongst the board an amendment would be recommended. So if it would help that move to it, I'd offer a motion to adopt GO114D and look for a second.
Okay, I didn't know. So we have a motion from Mike, and I know a few people spoke concurrently, but I heard Russell. So we'll record Russell as the second. So we have a motion and a second before us on this. Any further discussion? And as going back to you, Mike, did you want to propose an amendment?
Madam Chair, I wasn't necessarily prepared or interested in offering an amendment. I just wanted the record and the board to be aware that we were actually authorizing more than that was just included in the previous resolution. I personally am comfortable with the tool and the use of these short-term pools, particularly as over the years ADA has been given additional powers and additional complexity. Having worked around these things, I understand the staff time that goes into it. So I'm comfortable with the mechanism. Just as we watch how this is managed and how it's used, recognize we're given more than we authorized in the previous resolution.
Appreciate that clarity. Any further questions or discussion from board members? Seeing and hearing none, then let's move to a roll call vote on resolution GO1-14D.
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Mr. Pawlowski.
Yes.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Ms. Nygaard.
Yes.
Mr. Hughes.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Commissioner Bell.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Chair, could I jump in very quickly and make one last comment on our investment thing? Be very quickly.
Very quickly.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Just for the Chair and the Board's notice that we would like to reconvene a investment committee to look at our policy again. I believe it was about 2 years since we looked at our policy, and one of the issues is dealing with the foreign investment exposure, and we've learned some new information, and just once we have a new election of officers over the next month, I would ask the chair to reconvene the investment committee or an investment subcommittee to look at our policy, and this is, we could at that point in time get more information on what Mike was talking about also through that committee.
Thanks, Ted. I appreciate that. And I think right now, no action is needed at this time, but I think this discussion and your invitation is appreciated by the board. That brings us to item 7D, which is an update on the Endeavor Spirit of Independence jack-up race. Ted, did you want to proceed with that?
Yes, Chair. And I actually was going to do this really quickly. Mr. Hinsett had a vacation schedule that he could not change. And so when we changed the dates of the board meeting, he could not attend today. I don't know, Sherry, was he able to call in? But no, he was not able to call in. He is actually on a plane coming back. So I could give a very quick update of the report that we did send the board and answer any questions I could, and then we could have Mr. Hemseth again give an update at the next meeting.
Please do that.
Okay, thank you, Chair. To the board, again, the Endeavor rig is a investment we have in a jack-up rig in the Cook Inlet. This investment has had wide publicity as we've moved forward. The jack-up rig finally completed its refurbishments in August of this year, and moved out to the cosmopolitan area, which it completed its first will, according to reports from our the company, Buccaneer, that leases the rig from KLB, that the results of the will were very promising, and looks like that there was a very good gas line. Probably Mike would have more information on that than I do. But so after completing that well, we have the Buccaneer has moved the jackup rig to the Southern Cross.
And I'm on the phone if it helps.
Oh, Jim is here. Well, Jim, I would rather you take over since you have more detailed information on it. Are you... I just got to the point where the rig has moved to Southern Cross.
Perfect. Thanks. Actually, turns out I'm calling from the governor's office in D.C. So that's a phone call to you. How nice. The rig did move. It had probably been a very, very special campaign on the one well at Cosmopolitan with two major oil regimes and two major gas regimes and one oil regime. They've moved to Southern Cross. They went to their proof site, jacked the rig down, or jacked the rig up, jacked the rig, drill rig out, and then had some settling. And they did a side sonar and discovered that the tide, even though they're in an approved spot, had eroded a little bit of the soil behind the leg. So they kind of worked that out, worked with the state, moved the rig. Imagine this, you have to pull that drill rig back in, jack the legs up, the rig down, arrange for toes to move the rig 450 feet to the north, more or less, if I recall correctly, where this past weekend, and I had not gotten a note to say otherwise, they were to put their legs down on the 29th and start their Southern Cross campaign, and their goal was to hit 8,500 feet this season before the end of the month, when notionally, the ice season begins and they're required to move out of that part of Cook Inlet. From that point, they're going to move to another location to winterize the rig. They have, in spite of what the newspapers have said, they have not selected a site and are looking at a number of sites in the greater Cook Inlet region, though I will say, including the potential of putting the rig on location at the Cosmopolitan site where they wanted to do winter drilling in the gas regime, so which is shallower than where that the oil regime. They will not have approval from DNR or DEC to drill the oil zone in the winter. It's probably unlikely they will ever get that approval, but hope to use get their plan of operations approved in this time frame that will allow them to finish up their winterization on site, wherever that might be, and start drilling in the December to January time frame for further delineation of the Cosmopolitan field. That field itself is a good prospect. Buccaneer has acquired Apache's nearby leases that are part of that Cosmopolitan. Bluecrest, who's currently 75% owner, is looking at a development plan and financing. Their goal, actually, if they can, is to lay pipe this up a year from now, the next upcoming summer season, to allow them to tie in. And the reason they're looking for that, hope to have that goal, is that will allow them to take advantage of what should be a pipe-laying ship that would be working for Cook Inlet Energy and possibly even Fury. I'm not entirely sure. So while the ship is mobilized to Cook Inlet, they want to take advantage of their 12 miles pike. So that's where the Buccaneer is. Money's going into the checking account. We're working out the final operational details of payments. They have, they're finalizing, if not have already submitted, their ACES credit application for the first well and the winterization and the transportation of that rig to Cook Inlet, all of which are eligible expenses, which we, by operation agreement as part of the LLC, our preferred ownership gets us a first portion of part of that ACES credits related to the movement, shipment of the rig.
Okay.
So lots of ups and downs. They're all doing pretty good right now. They have actually financing in place. They've weathered their board of directors' argument, and are looking forward to a good operational season.
Thank you, Jim and Ted, for the update. We'll shift to any questions from the board.
And to the board, my apologies for not being there. When this wedding came up, we planned the Outrigger Days. The board meeting was last week, not this week.
We appreciate you phoning in, and again, we're certainly seeing a lot of activity in the media on this. And I think as we track the states, there's many projects, including within ADA, that are focused on gas and oil and gas, and appreciate this update. Is the board ready to move to item E?
Yep.
Okay. We'll move to the Interior Energy Project and appreciate that those of us that are remote, we have a printed copy of the PowerPoint presentation. Gary, did you get that?
Yes, I have it. Thanks for looking at it.
Okay.
Chair? I was just going to let you know that I'm going to hand the baton over to Gene and Mark to give the update for the Interior Energy Project.
Okay, just a moment, Chair. Which one?
That would probably be that 930 one.
930, right there. That's.
A myriad of buttons to push.
Hey.
Oh. All right.
So,
can we
get it?
No, that's as big as it's going to get. Can you hear us, Commissioner Bell?
Can
we hear you?
The 76.
It's actually the PowerPoint. Won't open my left, sir. The one that he's talking to. Can you hear us, Commissioner Bell?
We can hear you.
Okay. So this. Mark knows how to operate this. Also, we have Member Nygaard.
Okay. You were asking them to change the zoom to make it bigger.
No, there is no way.
You can't touch it then.
When that teleconference is on, it won't work.
PowerPoint won't work on the right screen and the video conference will. So we have a PDF.
Okay.
So it is what it is. And that's the biggest I can do.
Okay, thank you, Sherry. Commissioner, are we waiting for board member Gift?
We lost that.
We can understand that.
Kara?
Was saying 5 minutes, I think, while Russell stepped up.
See, as soon as you put audio, you get audio back with them, you lose your video conference.
Can we go, but can you guys work with the paper version and we'll work with the meeting
room
we
have?
Chair.
Yeah.
Over here. Okay.
Sorry about that, Chair. Board.
Okay. Thanks again.
All right. So
everybody else, if we can proceed with the paper copy, our video and sound are functional again here between you and Anchorage, and we'll ask Ted and your Ted, Ada, and AEA staff to proceed with the presentation.
Thank you, Commissioner. For the record, this is Mark Davis, and next to me is Gene Terrio, who I don't think quite shows up on your screen. So this is designed to be an update of the interior interview project. If you turn to page 2, we've just summarized again the FD23 finance package, which is composed of $150 million in ADA bonds. These would be SES bonds under the Sustainable Energy Transmission Fund, which was discussed earlier today. There's also $57.5 million in a capital budget appropriation. That, again, was taken out of the SES fund and transferred into the revolving fund. That's where those funds reside now. And then there was authorization from the legislature for a $125 million loan, again, from the SES fund. So that money went into SES. And by statutory authorization, the interest rate was set at a maximum of 3%. So that's, again, the component. And if you get a little more familiar with the pots of money that we have within the agency. So we're still focused on about a 9 BCF North Slope liquefaction plant, and then we are combining that with a gas distribution system, and that's designed to meet the needs, as the Mayor Hopkins noted, to meet the residential users, which are limited now in Fairbanks, and to expand the number of commercial users in Fairbanks that would use gas. And on that side, ADA has been taking kind of the lead on the plant, and AEA, primarily Mr. Terrio, has been working on the gas distribution side with AEA engineer Kurt Warren. Turn to page 3. We have another just schematic about how the Pure Energy Project would work. Again, you've got a plant on the north slope. Provisionally, it's a major source of the LNG. ADA would be in either we'd be in a finance position that is making the SES loan into the project, or it could be in a public-private partnership, depending on the equity allocation or the capital stack. The LNG produced would be trucked down the Dalton Highway. We're proposing that the plant probably will produce FOB, that is sales from the plant. Indications are that each potential user of the gas has their own requirements for how they like it trucked. So it's easier to let each company just contract with whoever they wish. Next would be regasification storage facilities in Fairbanks, and then the distribution system. That distribution system, as we noted, is going to be an effort between the Alaska Energy Authority and the local distribution company, or I should say companies, because that is up in the air as we'll go through. Turning to page 4. You want to take over now, Gene?
Sure. Just on page 4, independent distribution analysis. Due to the uncertainty of some of the information that was brought by the different proposers for distribution build-out, AEA has undertaken its own effort to estimate the number of miles of pipe that would be needed to fully pipe the existing service territory and the proposed expansion territory, because we needed to put together a mock distribution system so that we could get a better estimation primarily on the number of miles of pipe that would be needed to serve the customer base. We've done that using the borough's GIS information It has given us a mapping product that is much higher detail than either of the proposed providers. We're now working to come up with dollars per line item, do some dollars per line item estimating. That would be estimating the amount of 8-inch pipe or 4-inch pipe, just further refinement of the pipe, proposed pipe system or the possible pipe system. And we are mindful that while we have this effort going on so that we can get a better understanding of the potential cost, ultimately the service territory will be served by a provider. They will actually be the ones that are building the miles of pipe or putting the miles of pipe in the ground. Because of that, we did hold a design charrette or technical charrette with them at the beginning of August. So that we could explain the assumptions that we were using in our modeling and basically got their blessing that the assumptions that we were using, the process that we were using, was legitimate to come up with the number of miles of pipe. You may remember for the new board members, to pipe the largest potential service area in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, we had a difference of opinion between 500 miles of pipe and 1,000 miles of pipe, and that was leading to quite a bit of uncertainty on the final delivered price to the consumer. So we have further refined that. We have also worked on developing a possible 6-year build-out scenario. Again, keeping in mind that the actual utility will determine which areas get piped in a particular year. But we needed to come up with an estimation so that we could model how demand will grow to make sure that the proposed plant will be able to meet that growing demand as the expansion system builds out. So we have produced maps. We have supplied them to IGU and FNG, again, just so that they could look at our work product, see if we had used the correct assumptions on modeling that demand. We are trying to be very careful with those maps because we know there's such a desire to get access to natural gas in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, but again, because we're not actually building this system, we're just proposing how it might be built out. We don't want to mislead consumers to think that by looking at a map they can plan and count on getting access to the resource in year two, when in fact when the system actually builds up, it could be potentially in year four. So we're trying to, again, be sensitive with the information. We also have a study going on now with regards to, in conjunction with some survey work that IGU did, to estimate the price sensitivity of the individual consumers to convert their individual residents to natural gas. There will be, depending on the age of your boiler and the system that you have in your house, there could be a substantial expense in taking advantage of this new resource, and we are trying to get an idea of how quickly consumers will convert to the resource once it's made available to them in their geographic area. We're going to further refine survey information that IGU gathered with some focus groups that we'll be meeting here in the latter part of October, where individual consumers will actually be able to come to a meeting, bring their last year's bills, so that when we're talking about the amount of the cost of their energy bill for a year, they've actually got the data, and then when we come up with suggestions on how much they'll be able to save, they can then weigh into a conversation with more in-depth information on what type of incentive or assistance programs might incent them to actually convert sooner rather than later. ADA and AEA will be meeting with the local governing bodies in a work session on October 9th. I have kept the local governing bodies up to speed on the developments of the project. I've recently met with the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly, the City of Fairbanks Council. It has been a while, though, since I've met with the council from North Pole, but they will take part in the meeting next week. If you turn to page 5, it gives you an example of the mapping effort that we've taken, undertaken. You can see that this is a rather higher density area of the Fairbanks Municipal Borough. It is in the what we're calling the expansion area. And you can see that the mapping effort pretty much has the red lines, that's proposed miles of pipe, going to all areas of in this portion of the map grid that actually have structures on them. So that gives you an example of you know, how we have laid the pipe out to serve a high density area. If you now turn to slide 6, you can see a lower example of a lower density area, and you see the red pipe extending in from the bottom and also coming in from the top. However, those two systems do not connect, and that's an example of when you get out into a less dense area. As long as you can serve the customers on the south part by pipe coming in from the south, or gas coming in from the south, and also serve the folks on the north side by the gas coming in on the north, you wouldn't necessarily undertake the expense of connecting those portions of the pipe initially, because that adds initial expense that just drives up the cost of that initial delivery to consumers, perhaps unnecessarily. And there's even a question whether the RCA would actually allow you to close those two pieces of pipe and loop that portion of the system initially. As the piece of undeveloped property in between develops, the utility will reach out to serve more customers, and eventually they'll make an economic decision on when to close that loop. It certainly is desirable to have as much of your system be looped as possible. That's my understanding. The NSTAR system, which is considered to be a reliable delivery system, is not fully looped. The electric systems, Golden Valley system, Chugachu system, is not fully looped. They close those loops when it makes economic sense, but they do offer a high degree of reliability, even though they're not fully looped. So that just gives you an idea of the process that we've gone through. We are now digging down deeper into the GIS information. So on these proposed miles of pipe, we want to now come up with an estimation of the number of potential customers. From that number, then, we can do calculations that once we bring a resource into a new subdivision, if we expect 50% of the possible customers to commit and convert that first year, what demand does that present for the plant? Then the next year, you would expect another 20, 10%, whatever, to hook up that next year. Again, how does that then flow back up to impact the demand on the plant? And so, again, we're using that GIS system, further refining it so that we can do those calculations based on the borough's information, because it is the most update information. And with that, I think I'll turn it back over to Mark.
Thank you. This, for Rogers Park Davis, the next issue we have is slide 7. We have an opportunity that's to discuss the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. There are now competing applications from Fairbanks Natural Gas and the Insured Gas Utility for areas of the borough which are not currently served by Fairbanks Natural Gas. That is, the Fairbanks Natural Gas already has a certificated area, which is in the primarily downtown and high-density areas of Fairbanks. The IGU has not challenged that, and does not challenge that because their ordinance is, explicitly states they shall not. And so the decision before the Regulatory Commission is to whether to grant either company an expanded service area. That would include, for example, North Pole would be an area that would be an expansion. We have council monitoring the process, been present, and we are told the RCA decisions on the two applications are still scheduled for mid-October. What we wanted to inform the board is that process does not slow the IEP process. First, because we're prepared and we can work with either utility if they're granted an expanded service area. That is, that would be within our design. You've seen that the AEA work covers that expanded area, so we're just prepared to work with them. So whoever gets it, we'll work with them. The other issue, of course, is that the current Fairbanks Natural Gas area contains a substantial amount of a customer by volume. That is not the actual customers, but the volumes that would be sold. AAA estimates that would be about 70% by volume, so that there's enough sales within the current FNG certificated area to start the process of the plant. And you can, and we've AEA has looked at the number amount of pipe that would be to build out the FNG existing area, and we estimate it to be 131. We're about 1 mile off from the existing utility, so we were pretty pleased with our estimate. And of course, one issue for the plant is you'd have a total demand of about 4.8 BCF. But you have a peak demand in the winter. This is the swings that make this project a little difficult, up to 7.9. So again, that's why it's still a recommendation for a larger plant to cover that swing.
And these numbers are for what area?
This is for the existing Fairbanks Natural Gas certificated area.
Not a North Pole expansion.
Right. Because we just don't know yet, Board Member Wilson and Youth, until we get the RCA to tell us what they're going to do. They could give some to FNG. They could give some to IGU. They could deny both. There's a lot of parameters. So that's why we have council monitoring. And when we get those orders, we'll crank that in. Of course, there could be an appeal. So it could be a while. Turning to 8, I want to expand a little bit on what Gene said. We are working hard on a conversion study. We've hired consultants. Known as Cardno. You may have heard of them. They're working on a Kennecon Bridge study. They're looking at incentives for financing. So the two issues we have is what would be the rate of conversion, how many people would convert, as Gene said, where would they be? You know, that creates uncertainty. The other issues would be what could be done to convince people to convert. So what we've asked them to do is look at what's been done in other jurisdictions, other states, other counties, other communities, and they're providing us with a survey of ideas. And also they'll be looking against the work already done by Northern Economics, or now called NEI, on conversions. There were two studies done, one for Ada and one for the Fairbanks Marshfield Borough. And we're also going to ask them to look at the air quality effects and the economic benefits. You heard Mayor Hopkins say, note that this is an economic issue for the community, not only high prices, but other multiplier effects that are starting to affect the Fairbanks area. If you look at 9, we're in discussions with potential LNG plant participants. Technical review has been done on the plant proposals we have in hand. We are also continuing the LNG plant permitting process. The major issue there will be a major air permit that might be needed, and we have begun the process of applying for that permit. We've been in discussions with DEC on what type of permit would be needed, and we're also looking at alternative supplies of natural gas. That is it possible to bring gas from the Cook Inlet on a temporary basis to jumpstart this system? So, we turn to 10. Again, we're working on the financial side to see what kind of development structure we can put together. There have been meetings with the LNG plant proposers and discussed business terms and the technical side. The team, for example, went down recently and had an in-depth technical review with Spectrum in Houston. And so we're in the process of going through those proposals. As I said, we found it with that on 11. We are continuing the permitting that has been undertaken by our consultant, HDR. And we expect all the permits to be obtained on time. We have an estimate that the permits necessary for this plant, and there will be a lot of them, would be available in the autumn of next year. That would be well before the construction of the plant. And that's a lead time we need to have in place. And we would probably, you've been told that we've created a LLC for this project. We would probably have that LLC lease a pad from DNR. The permits would be obtained by the LLC and then could be transferred to any other entity that we partnered with or decided to run the plant or took the loan. There's various structures in the way this financing may work. It could be a loan. It could be a mixture of equity and loan. As you know, you can see SB 23 allowed us those options. One thing SB 23 did not do is give us enough money to develop this project without a private partner.
Mark, before you jump into the time schedule, very quickly, some of the board members have also asked us to do some research on different plants, LNG plants, that work in the Arctic environment. We are going through the process of identifying those, and then we'll work with the board subcommittee on how to review how those LNG plants do operate in the Arctic and the issues that come up with operating in the Arctic that would be different from an LNG plant down south. So we are going through that process also. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Jeff. So the next slide, just to give you an idea of the amount of preventers, well, you can see that there are quite a few. This is typical in any kind of project today. There's a mixture of building permits and environmental permits that essentially in today's environment, all those permits are basically what you need to build something. So we've identified them, and we're in the process of applying for all of those. For example, we've been in discussions. We see the first one, the 404 permit, after air permit. There's ways to expedite that by using a national permit. We've been in discussions with the United States Corps of Engineering, and they've indicated that they would approve a national permit, and that would be a quicker process. So if you look at 13, just a continuation of again.
Mark, this is Jim. If I could just interject one thing on the permits.
Right.
And that's the right-of-way permit, which is an RCA-required permit versus a permit from Department of Mineral Law, Land and Water. And to assure ourselves that we can meet the schedules we need, we've actually split those two requests or those two permits, one for right-of-way only and one for the pad, to make sure that we're as efficient as possible in getting something constructed this spring for a pad if necessary.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah. I mean, that's Jim's team has been, you know, monitoring how we do this, and as he said, you know, if we need to split it up or we need to make application, we're prepared to do that. And then it continues on to 13. And then on 14, we just have the revised Gantt chart. We've been trying to take off tasks completed, and now I have a new category, which indicates tasks in a way that some of the things are started but not completed. And you can see that one of them is the working with potential participants in the project is not completed but underway. The RCA service area on the distribution side is the same thing. We've been monitoring the RCA. We've read all the briefs. And we've got counsel assigned to it. We're just waiting for the regulatory commission to decide what they wish to do, and then that'll trigger the gas contract issues, because then we'll know what utility might be serving which areas. And that should, we hope, occur relatively soon and not hold us up. So we don't intend to be stopped by what's going on before the RCA, because we can always build out the existing FNG system. So that's our presentation. I'd be
Thank you, Mark and team. And we know many people are closely watching this at the community level, statewide level, and the entities that have applied to be part of the project. So we'll turn to board questions on the presentation or other matters related to interior energy.
I had one quick question. The contract on the hall, who will contract to haul? Will it be the distribution side or will it be the production side?
That's a very good question. I think once utilities are set up in Fairbanks that would purchase the gas, I would anticipate those utilities would contract with these trucking companies for their particular needs and then truck the gas into Fairbanks. There also, however, could be sales for industrial users, and that would be more from the plant itself, and those users would probably also contract. So that is because there's different type of users and the different little uncertainty about which utilities we have that are going to purchase gas, so we decided to go with an independent private contracting model.
But Ada and its private partner would sell liquefied natural gas, FOB, crude oil.
Yes.
Correct.
And then whomever would negotiate for the best arrangement to get it into the distribution system and in turn distribute.
Yes, and one reason for that was when we talked to two of the utilities, they had different views, for example, on what type of trucks or what type of contract they'd like to have.
Right.
And there's several trucking companies that are always interested, so we think let them bid out the best price, the best system.
Okay.
And we don't interfere with that.
Gotcha.
Thank you. Other questions from board members?
Through the chair.
Crystal?
I have a quick question. So right now, Ada's working on reaching these firm agreements to who's going to develop the plant. My understanding is the air permit is really driven by the technology that's going to be used. Is that your understanding?
We have asked HDR to give us a permit that would be usable with the various plant designs that we have in place, and they have not yet filed for that permit, but we have a timeline set up where they'll be able to file for the appropriate technology and make it in time, according to HDR.
Okay.
Good, Jim. Jim, would you want to elaborate on that at all?
I could, and that I think the answer that was, I'm not sure you asked the question, so I'm sorry. That is a very broadly correct what you said. There are some uniquenesses though. So part of it is the location, and part of it is modeling the current ambient air conditions, which is what we're working on. The base case model that we're using for our model is a technology that is two of the three proponents have proposed. The other model, the Spectrum model, would be slightly different, mostly in terms that it uses a little less power, in which case what we've covered in terms of emissions and restrictions and best available technology would cover as well. But the plants generally are fairly similar, and we can proceed quite a bit with the permit and come back with an amendment as necessary as more detailed engineering is done.
Yeah, and we've expressly asked HDR to be flexible and work with either. And I'm confident they can do that.
Thank you. Other questions from board members? Dana?
On the previous question about the trucking, my first impression would be that, one, is there any long lead items with trucks or trailers, specialized trailers? Does that affect the schedule, especially if the end user may be picking who the trucking company is? That may be a cause of hiccup in actually the delivery system. The other is, there any talk of workforce development or anything in Fairbanks as far as availability of qualified drivers and the maintenance folks up there? I will say that my own business, that we have a very hard time finding qualified folks right now in this industry. I assume Fairbanks may be having the same pressures, which also may be a roadblock in order to do that. And I'm just curious to find out if that has been researched or
a couple of responses. First of all, we contacted with the company in Prologue from Canada to look at the overall trucking and lead times for trailers. We've also talked to Fairbanks Natural Gas, and they have their own trailers, and they think they have sufficient trailers for what they want to do in place. If we have another utility, obviously it's going to need to get their own trailers, but the lead time on trailers is not as long as the lead time on LNG tractors. Therefore, I think this project may well start out with diesel tractors, which are more readily available, and then morph into LNG tractors, if that makes sense. Again, we would let the trucking companies deal with the logistics and the staffing. We are, however, in contact with the Department of Labor on this project, and if they identify, we've been talking informally with the trucking company. if they identify that kind of issue. Assistant Commissioner Cashin is aware of what we're trying to do, and we would work with him.
Thank you. Other questions from board members? Well, again, thank you, Mark, Jean, Jim, Ted. We appreciate the ongoing updates, and again, certainly noted the a couple of deadlines on the white paper and ongoing communication in the community coming up as early as next week on October 9th. So thank you. So that moves us to item F, which is an executive session. After that, we have election of officers, which will be effective for our next board meeting, and then director report and board comments. So, Ted, will you be moving then to the smaller conference room there on site?
Yes, Chair. One quick issue I'd like to bring up on the IEP, and I didn't know if you're going to do it later, Commissioner, but currently we have two IEP members on the subcommittee, and we could have a third member.
I open this session by thanking Crystal for expressing interest
in making
sure
that
the board
was...
So Crystal has replaced Hugh, and so we're fully staffed, and I know that you'll be convening discussions amongst the subcommittee. So is that... we'll check that.
Sorry about that, Chair. I don't know how I missed that.
I think it might... We were shuffling logistics there, but again, we appreciate the engagement from all the board members on this matter, and Crystal will round out our subcommittee. So as we move to item F, we do need a motion to move an executive session, and Jerry Judé, if you can help us articulate that.
You just need to move to go to an executive session, discuss the status of the Healy Clean Coal Plant, which is proper for executive sessions, which involve confidential financial information and also litigation matters.
Do we have a motion?
So moved.
We have a motion from Russell. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second from Wilson. So, Ted, again, are you going to move to that smaller office?
Yes, we will, sir. Yeah.
I'm going to leave all this technology set up, just put it on mute, and we'll phone in to the executive session. So, Gary, you'll need to do the same?
Yeah, I'm fine.
So we'll meet you in...